The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Motion is carried. Orders of the day, oral questions put by members to ministers. The time is now 1:10. We will finish at 2:10. We'll now recognize the Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, last week a significant amount of evidence was filed with the Utility and Review Board that sharply criticizes Nova Scotia Power and the Maritime Link project. Experts hired by the Consumer Advocate and the Small Business Advocate stated that the Maritime Link is not the lowest long-term cost alternative for ratepayers in the province, and, Mr. Speaker, they offered proof of this assertion. So my question to the Deputy Premier, in light of the evidence filed by these experts, will the NDP government extend the deadline of the hearing before the URB?
The Honourable the Deputy Premier.
Thank you. Someone said good question. Well, he's going to get a good answer. Mr. Speaker, that... Mr. Speaker... The answer, quite simply put, Mr. Speaker, is we've answered this question many times, and Mr. Speaker, it is the Muskrat Falls and the Maritime Link is our best solution, and we're going forward with it. And, okay, see, see, Mr. Speaker, I've been finally stumped by another Cape Bretoner, Mr. Speaker. But, Mr. Speaker, that's where we're going, and the URB has the tools in which to decide this, and I have every confidence in the board, and they will move this forward in a timely manner that fits their schedule. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Speaker, I think the Deputy Premier might have made a mistake there. He was actually going right beyond the Utility Review Board and suggesting his government was going to push it right through, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it wasn't just the Consumer Advocate or the Small Business Advocate, but the Canadian Wind Energy Association as well, an association that is trying to bring business to Nova Scotia, business that the NDP government is steadfastly against, Mr. Speaker. It's called small business, Mr. Speaker. If it doesn't have Nova Scotia Power, Mr. Speaker, if it doesn't have Nova Scotia Power or corporation attached to its name, the NDP government isn't interested. So my question to the Deputy Premier, why is the NDP government so soundly against independent renewable energy, jobs and investments in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable the Deputy Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to, I guess, know from the Leader of the Opposition why he's against ComFit, Mr. Speaker. I mean, we've been working with these small utilities for quite some time, these people with the wind energy. I don't know what more we can say on that. We've been working with these people. We've been the party that's moving it forward, not standing in their way, not granting, with the setup of a mirror like the Liberals did, Mr. Speaker. We are helping these folks through ComFit. And, you know, if they don't accept that...
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this government is doing exactly what Nova Scotia Power tells them to do, Mr. Speaker. Let's be very clear about that, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Deputy Premier, the Premier, and the entire NDP government are blindly championing a project, Mr. Speaker, that will cost Nova Scotians a minimum of $1.5 billion, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, but they can't tell us what it will mean to power bills until 2017, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, they won't extend the deadline of this hearing to ensure that Nova Scotians have a full review of this project and get a full hearing on all the evidence that has been put before the board. So my question to the Premier, why is the NDP government and Nova Scotia Power hiding from the people of this province?
Honourable the Deputy Premier.
I don't know what he's talking about hiding, Mr. Speaker. It's at the Utility Review Board. It's part of the name is public. Mr. Speaker, we're there in the public doing it. I don't know why. He keeps saying extend the deadline, Mr. Speaker. That's because a couple of his friends may see that view. But, Mr. Speaker, the board hasn't asked. Mr. Speaker, we're going forward with it, Mr. Speaker, and we're going forward. I know the member from Dartmouth East is having a hard time keeping that hinge on his tongue together, Mr. Speaker. But the fact is, we're going forward with this, Mr. Speaker. The board is working on it, Mr. Speaker. Doing the right thing for all Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, and it will be done properly.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we in the PC caucus, we sent a Freedom of Information request to the government asking for detailed correspondence around the decision the government made to not tell Nova Scotians about the $27 million hole they had in their budget. We received 23 pages back, one of which was seriously blacked out, Mr. Speaker. The government has been keeping the decision around not telling people about the $27 million from the people of Nova Scotia, and this is just the latest example. So, and I'll table that, actually, Mr. Speaker, for the Deputy Premier, the blacked out version, and ask him, will he agree today, never mind the Freedom of Information request, will he agree today to provide all of the correspondence around Treasury Board's decision not to tell Nova Scotians about the $27 million mistake?
Here. Honourable the Deputy Premier.
Mr. Speaker, you know, I don't know where the leader of the Progressive Conservative Party who does his questions, but I don't know. Did him and his caucus sleep through the day that the deputy finance minister was here and went through that the whole system with him? Did they not hear it there? They keep saying these things, hiding, Mr. Speaker. We've been very open about this, and we're trying to answer their questions, but they just won't listen.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I was here the day that the Deputy Finance Minister talked about the $27 million, and what she exactly said, and the record will show it, is that the decision to not tell the people of Nova Scotia was made by the Treasury Board, the very board that member, who just answered a question, is responsible for. Now, I pointed out that when we asked for the presentations that went to Treasury Board, we got a 23-page response. One of those pages was blacked out. Well, I happen to have the other 22 pages with me, Mr. Speaker, and I'll table them. And every single number, every single item in those 22 pages is also blacked out. That's got nothing to do with the Deputy Minister of Finance, who is not elected, and everything to do with the President of the Treasury Board, the Deputy Premier, who is elected, who did make the decision not to tell Nova Scotians why they presented a budget that was missing $27 million. Mr. Speaker, so I'll ask the Deputy Premier, if they truly have nothing to hide in this matter, will he agree to release publicly all of the presentations and correspondence at Treasury Board dealing with the $27 million mistake?
Honourable the Deputy Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, the member's asking these questions, and he knows full well, but these have been answered before, and because of other folks around his bench that have really not much insight into how government works. But, Mr. Speaker, these have been put forward. There was a timeline for the budget to be written, and he knows that. And we've told him that time and time again. That's the reality of it, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, here's a little insight for the Deputy Premier on how government should work. When you make a mistake, and you know it in time to change the budget, you should tell the truth to the people of Nova Scotia. That's how government should work. And what's so ironic is when they were in opposition, the NDP promised more transparency in government. Yet here we have an example where they knowingly presented a budget saying they were on track when in fact they weren't. And when we ask for the information, they don't give it to us or to anyone else, Mr. Speaker, and that is what's wrong. So as long as the Deputy Premier insists on keeping the information away from the people of Nova Scotia, I will ask him, will he apologize to the people of Nova Scotia for keeping them in the dark right up till today?
Order, order, please, order. I wonder in that question, did I hear that the honourable member was saying that the deputy premier wasn't telling the truth? That is unparliamentary to suggest that.
Mr. Speaker, my question is, will he apologize for not providing Nova Scotians with all the information?
Okay, I'm just hoping that it's imputed motive to say that the honourable member is not telling the truth. The honourable deputy premier.
Keep it quiet. Well, Mr. Speaker, you know what? Maybe we'll play a little game here with the member. Maybe when he apologizes to the Auditor General for when questions he asked us, the Auditor General, and around it, they were fixed, Mr. Speaker. And maybe he should apologize for the AG when the AG looked at our budget this year and gave it a non-qualified thumbs up, Mr. Speaker. That's what he should apologize. Thank you.
The honourable member for Richmond.
Disagreement, Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians were shocked yesterday to learn that Ernest Fenwick McIntosh will be a free man. Mr. Speaker, our thoughts are clearly with his victims and their families at this unfortunate decision. Mr. Speaker, what's even more disappointing is the fact that charges for which Mr. McIntosh was convicted were overturned due to the mishandling of the case by our justice system. While there are clear issues regarding the extradition process, the fact is that it took the Nova Scotia Public Prosecution Service 3 years to bring Mr. McIntosh to court after he was back in Canada. Now, my question is, will the Minister of Justice explain to Nova Scotians and to Mr. McIntosh's victims what went wrong here?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I can only imagine how heartbreaking this news was for those who testified about abuse. I do know that Nova Scotians are outraged, and they want to know how this could have happened. And I'm very pleased that the Director of Public Prosecutions is doing a review and going to get that report to me, that the RCMP are conducting a review and going to get their report to me. They've advised me that they're going to get that within the next 2 or 3 weeks. So that will put me in a better position to have some context. And we know the historical nature of this file goes back into the 70s, and that the decades that this matter has been in the process raises concerns to everyone. And I do know that tomorrow I'm going to have the opportunity to speak to my counterparts in Ottawa, and this is one of the issues that I'm putting on. And I couldn't agree more with the member's question, is that we do need to take that. And I want to assure all Nova Scotians that this government and this minister respects the point of view that's out there, and that we're on top of this issue.
The honourable member for Richmond on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the facts show that the allegations against Mr. McIntosh came forward in the 1990s. It took over 10 years to extradite him back to Canada. And once in Canada, it took a further 3 years for the Public Prosecution Service here in Nova Scotia to take action. Mr. Speaker, at that point, the Public Prosecution Service had to know that there was going to be a significant risk that Mr. McIntosh was going to argue that justice had been delayed here. Yet they waited 3 full years to finally bring this matter to court. Mr. Speaker, when a Nova Scotia Court of Appeal in December of 2011 overturned the convictions due to the delays that had taken place, I asked the Minister of Justice to immediately order a review of what had taken place here. So my question is, will the Minister of Justice explain why he refused to take action in 2011 to find out why the breakdown in the justice system took place and allowed the 18 counts of indecent assault and gross indecency against 4 boys to be overturned by our courts?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As the Attorney General, I accept and respect the decision of the Supreme Court, and I'm outraged with the fact that there's the allegations of abuse that have gone forward and are no longer before the court. The fact is that the member clearly pointed out that this case goes back to the 90s and that it's over 10 years old, and that I am going to talk to my federal counterpart tomorrow and discuss this issue and my concerns surrounding that. But I think it's very important as the Attorney General that I have sound facts and information, and those reviews will be very critical to me. And it's important that I don't overreact and make decisions that are not informed. I think it's critical to have information. And the member knows that when the court process is going on, that's not the time to do the review. It's see the findings of the court, get the information, and then conduct and move forward in a very practical manner.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, when it comes to the administration of justice and ensuring that justice is seen to be done in this province, one thing this Minister of Justice will never be accused of is overreacting. Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Justice can't have it both ways. He stands in the House today and says the RCMP are reviewing what they did. The Crown Prosecution Service is reviewing what they did. Yet this is the same minister that created the Serious Incident Review Team to investigate serious incidents following police when he stated it's inappropriate that police would be reviewing themselves when a serious incident takes place. Nova Scotians want a public inquiry, independent, to see exactly what went on here. If the Minister of Justice is going to Ottawa, we'd hope that he'd be giving the same message to his federal counterpart that there should be an independent inquiry as to what went wrong on the federal level when it came to extradition. So my question to the Minister of Justice today, on behalf of all Nova Scotians who you've acknowledged are outraged, and on behalf of the victims who were proven to be correct by our courts, will you order a public, independent inquiry into the Fenwick McIntosh case?
Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I want to thank the member for acknowledging that I conduct my business in a very practical, responsible, respectful manner. So thank you for that comment. I want to reiterate that I will be speaking to my federal counterpart and that I will get the sufficient information so that when decisions are made, Nova Scotians have confidence that they're well-informed and they carry out. So I do thank the member for raising the question, and I want to end by saying that in my previous life as an investigator and looking people in the eye that have been a victim or abused, I understand the conflict that they're in, and I understand in this case those that have alleged abuse and went through the system, how they must feel, and I respect that and will ensure that as I move forward that their conflict will be acknowledged and will be addressed.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Speaker, Nova Scotians have been calling on this government to conduct a full public inquiry into the alleged abuses at the Nova Scotia Home for Coloured Children since last year. Initially, the Premier said they couldn't act while civil and criminal cases are being investigated or before the courts. That has since passed, Mr. Speaker, and the government has had time to act. It has been years, Mr. Speaker, that people have been waiting to bring their stories forward and to start the healing. My question to the Deputy Premier, why has this government denied Nova Scotians a public inquiry into the alleged abuses at the Nova Scotia Home for Coloured Children?
The Honourable Deputy Premier.
Mr. Speaker, thank you very much for that, but I would ask that the Minister of Justice answer that question on behalf of the government.
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I know that this is a long, emotional process, and I understand that the former residents want closure. This case has been going on for many years under successive governments. This government has done more than any other government to give former residents a chance to have their voice, and we will continue to move that process forward. And the consultation has been wide amongst the community and stakeholders on this issue, and we're listening.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, it's been almost 4 years. It's time to stop listening and start acting, Mr. Speaker. Speaker, in the speech from the throne, Mr. Speaker, this government committed to a hearing process for people to share their stories. Former residents have called on this government for an inquiry, not a panel. and have asked that there be a restorative element of action taken by government so that we can learn from this tragedy and do better by our fellow citizens. So my question for the Deputy Premier, will the Deputy Premier tell those individuals who continue to carry the weight of abuses suffered at the home why his government has been inactive in their request for an inquiry?
The Honourable the Deputy Premier. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, to the Leader of the Liberal Party, you know, this government's been anything but inactive. Mr. Speaker, we've been dialoguing with the folks at the home and the folks. So, Mr. Speaker, we've been very proactive with them, and we've been discussing it. In the member's question, Mr. Speaker, we've been entering in dialogues with those folks. So we're trying to move this file forward. I understand, these types of instances are very, very emotional, and that we are trying to proceed as carefully and as judiciously as possible with the respect of the perceived victims, Mr. Speaker. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Speaker, the government has been talking, Mr. Speaker, to residents of the Home for Colored Children, Mr. Speaker, but they're not listening to them, Mr. Speaker. Even in their statement from the speech from the throne, Mr. Speaker, they alleged that this was being supported, Mr. Speaker, by the victims, Mr. Speaker, when in actual fact, if anyone listened to the dialogue that happened outside of this house, that is absolutely false, Mr. Speaker. The victims, Mr. Speaker, in this case, want a public inquiry. Mr. Speaker, why will the Deputy Premier tell those residents who are looking to this government to act and to right a wrong why his government is just sitting, Mr. Speaker, on this file?
Honourable the Deputy Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, it's confusing because, Mr. Speaker, in part of his question, he rolls off a litany of things that we are doing, Mr. Speaker, to resolve this. And then he denies it over here. Mr. Speaker, we are doing something by the mere fact if he just listened to his own question. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Justice. The people who worked on the Fenwick McIntosh case already know exactly why they failed to bring this man before the courts. We don't. There is no need to wait weeks for an internal review. The minister could have completed his review long ago. He's been aware for at least a year that there were serious questions around the delay of the prosecution of McIntosh, questions raised in public by those who courageously came forward to tell their stories of abuse, and also by the Court of Appeal. My question, would the minister show that he has a heart and that he cares about what the victims of abuse went through and explain the result of his internal review by the end of this week?
Honourable the Minister of Justice.
Thank you. And I want to thank the member for raising the question because obviously he missed the opposition party asking the question earlier and the answer that I gave. So I'm not so sure why he didn't hear it, but I'll repeat it. I can't stress enough from a personal perspective that my heart goes clearly out to all those that brought allegations forward before the court in the outcome that's occurred for them. As the Attorney General, I respect the decisions of the Supreme Court and their decision. I want to read the court's decision more in depth. As well, I want to get the direct feedback from the public prosecutions and from the RCMP. I don't think it would have been appropriate for me to ask for that prior to getting the decision of the court and the outcome while that process is on. Everybody knows that that is a requirement within my office. So, unequivocally, since he raised the question about having a heart, I want to look people straight in the eye. I spent a lifetime dealing with these issues, and I'm committed to the people of Nova Scotia and anyone that is abused.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, these matters could have been reviewed internally by the minister over the past year. But I want to go beyond this idea of an internal review, because can we really trust those who fail to bring McIntosh to court to fairly review themselves? We need an independent review. Now, the minister has officials in Ottawa as we speak offering to help on a bill for victims' rights, a victim's bill of rights. Yet back home, he plans to do an internal review. And it begs the question, Mr. Speaker, what is the goal of the minister? This minister represents the justice system in Nova Scotia. Can't he do something more than just bury this issue?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Well, thank you to the member for the question, and I'm very pleased that he asked that question and framed it that way, because on the issue of victims is something that I had planned for some time to meet with my colleagues across the country. We're meeting in Ottawa tomorrow with my federal counterpart to address that. It's an issue that's been on our minds and something that I've been working on for some time. So I do take this seriously. Nova Scotia is not an island the last time I checked, although you being from Cape Breton, your part is. And we do not act alone. On these types of issues, we consult with our other ministers of justice across the country in the federal, provincial, territorial process. That's what's there. I have a meeting directly to speak to the federal minister. Short of going to the prime minister, that's as high as we can go on the issue. It's dialogue that we have been ongoing. It is timely that the court decision has come back and I'm able to discuss these direct issues with the federal minister. And I hope that with his contacts in Ottawa, that he shares his point of view and his party's point of view, so that when I am there, that we have a consensus from Nova Scotia that we're deeply concerned about this and that we have to work in conjunction with our federal counterparts and our other provincial territorial to set good policy and the rule of law enforced across the province.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I've heard a lot of talk, but I haven't heard the Minister say anything about doing an independent review. Now, I know the people who have been affected by this want an independent review. And I think our actions in this legislature speak volumes about where we stand on matters. Now, an independent review with the input from victims will verify whether the Public Prosecution Service is actually telling the truth. Will the minister do the right thing and not only ask for that Public Prosecution Service to deliver their report by the end of this week, but also engage a full independent review to see what went wrong, to honour the bravery of the victims who came forward to tell their stories?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
You know, I think Nova Scotians expect that the Attorney General would get sufficient information and have the knowledge and background of events that have occurred. And when we talk about the truth, you as a member may not believe in the public prosecutions. They're an independent body from government, the politician from directing them. There's a way and a method to assess and question them. And we are going to get to the bottom of this, as well as that there's a huge component of this with the federal government. And I think it's critical that I meet and have dialogue with the federal government. In addition, looking at how this issue was handled by previous administrations may be an area that may need that. But when the member talks about truth, I have a lot of concern when it comes from that party on these types of issues.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Avalon Sexual Assault Centre has met with members of this government to discuss the sexual assault nurse examiner program, the shortage of sexual assault counsellors across the province, and the chronic underfunding of sexual assault services. In the wake of recent news reports, the number of calls to the centre has increased. More people are reaching out for support and are turning to the centre, the very centre that was underfunded in the first place, and where people have to wait 6 months for counselling services because of understaffing. My question is to the Deputy Premier. The Avalon Centre is calling for emergency funding to deal with the onslaught of calls. Will you commit to providing the centre with emergency funding?
The Honourable the Deputy Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I think all parties will agree that no matter who sits on this side of the table, on the side of the floor, supports the work of the Avalon Sexual Assault Centre. But I would ask the minister responsible if she could answer it in more fullness for the member.
The Honourable Minister responsible for the status of women.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to start my answer by commending all those who provide support services to women and girls in this province for the excellent work that they have done over many, many years. And certainly the Avalon Sexual Assault Center is part of that network. One thing we want to do is to make sure that the changes that happen in this province are done so they provide a comprehensive, coordinated support infrastructure across this province. Currently, the province supports the Avalon Sexual Assault Center to the tune of about $640,000. Is this enough money for those services? Probably not. But we want to make sure that the changes or any improvements that we make are done to support all women in this province. So, for example, there's spotty coverage. In some regions of this province, it's fairly good support. In other areas, they don't have access to those programs and services. So this isn't a time to look necessarily at the mandate and work of one organization. We are trying to be strategic and make sure that we bring all the organizations together to have more coverage across Nova Scotia. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Avalon Sexual Assault Center submitted a needs assessment in 2008. So that was 5 years ago. 5 years and no response to recommendations from government. It took a public tragedy for this government to wake up to the sexual assault crisis in this province. It's been 5 years and we still have the highest rates of sexual assaults in the country and the lowest conviction rates. The need for funding is not a new phenomenon. Will the Deputy Premier commit to sustainable funding for sexual assault services across the province?
Honourable the Deputy Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And to the member, you know, I believe that the minister had answered that in her previous question, but again, for more clarity, I'll ask the minister responsible to answer the question.
The Honourable Minister responsible for the status of women.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not going to stand in this chamber and defend the status quo. Have we done enough and have we done it fast enough? The answer is no. But there is a renewed commitment, I think, right across this province that as we hear more and more incidents of sexual violence against women and girls in this province, that we have to do something. There's enough blame to go around. I think every single individual in this province can probably think of ways that they could have intervened or made life better for girls and women. We are committed to make a change this time, and we're going to be strategic. It's not a matter of just adding money. We have to work together, and we're going to look at both aspects of that. I have already met with the executive director of the Avalon Sexual Assault Center. I'm going to visit their center and meet with her and some of the counselors leadership team from that center to get a better sense of what the additional workload might be. So the request is under active consideration, but we need to do it in concert with all the other changes that we plan to make. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The needs assessment was submitted to the former government in 2008. There was also another report submitted the year before about building a SANE network for Nova Scotia. That was submitted in 2007. The blueprint for this has been in the government hands since it was elected. I will table that report. The Avalon Sexual Assault Center has been asking for help to meet the needs of its clients long before this current crisis. Now the government says we're going to act because of this crisis, but the fact remains that this organization has been underfunded for a long time, and it took this government a national tragedy, a national embarrassment to wake up. This government has been sitting on recommendations for action the entire time they've been in office. Why should Nova Scotians trust that this government's going to do anything different now?
Honourable the Deputy Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, if the member wants to know about issues that happened in 08, maybe she can ask the member sitting to her her left. But, Mr. Speaker, in minus of that, I'm going to her right. But, Mr. Speaker, Mr. Speaker, I would like to allow the Minister for Status of Women to answer that.
The Honourable Minister responsible for the status of women.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, I'm not going to stand here and defend the status quo. It's not good enough. We all know that, and we're going to move forward on this. But we have to do it in a way that provides excellent or much better coverage in terms of the whole continuum, prevention of sexual violence, interventions, supports, treatment afterwards. There's a whole series of actions and supports that have to happen, and it has to happen at all levels of government, and there has to be support across our communities. And so that's what I've been doing over the past week, talking to municipal councillors and mayors and wardens, talking to community leaders. There has to be a change of attitude and commitment on behalf of all of us, every single individual. And I would say that the change starts with us. So, you know, I've had a chance to meet with the two opposition leaders. I really appreciate their offers of help. I have not met one person who's approached me in the last week and a half who hasn't said, we have to do better. What can I do to help? So let's take that interest, that energy, that spotlight on this issue and make sure that there's improved situation for women and girls in this province. The onus is on all of us, not any particular government. Thank you.
The leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Deputy Premier. Throughout our questioning of the government about their budget with the $27 million hole in it, the Deputy Premier and others have consistently said that the reason is simply due to updating of schedules and the need for a cutoff date where they can't accept any new information and not actually an error in the budget. But, Mr. Speaker, that's not what the Auditor General says from his own report, and I quote, he says that the error resulted from two main factors. One, a change in the calculation to adjust calendar year revenues determined by revenue models to fiscal year revenues. In other words, they were using the wrong year end compared to what the province needs. An actual error, not a matter of just an update to the schedule. And so I'll ask the Deputy Premier if he wants to reconsider his previous defences and tell Nova Scotians that, in fact, there was an error, a real error, not a cutoff error, in the budget that could have been fixed. And I'll table the schedule for the Deputy Premier.
The Honourable the Deputy Premier.
Mr. Speaker, you know, they try as he will, the leader of the Conservative Party just won't listen. It's his problem, Mr. Speaker. We've told him over and over and over again, Mr. Speaker, there was no error, so to speak, as he likes to put it, Mr. Speaker. The reality was that there was a filing date. We met it. We did the right thing, and he just won't accept it.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, like all Nova Scotians, I've been listening very carefully, and I still don't hear the proper answer. And for that reason, I would rather listen to the advice of the Auditor General in his own report instead of the Deputy Premier, because the Auditor General says very clearly it's an error that the Treasury Board used the wrong information with the wrong year end, and they knew it, and the difference was $27 million, and they kept it to themselves. I heard the Auditor General say that, and he put it in writing. That's what's in dispute here, Mr. Speaker. The Deputy Premier had an opportunity to do the right thing, and that is to tell Nova Scotians what happened, to provide that information openly. And yet when we asked for the information, he blanked out 22 and a half out of 23 pages. Well, that's not good enough, Mr. Speaker, so we're going to continue to ask, will he finally do the right thing and give Nova Scotians all the information his department has on the $27 million, like we've been asking, and then they can decide for themselves who is listening to them and who isn't?
Honourable the Deputy Premier.
Mr. Speaker, they have all the information. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, here's a piece of information that we do have. The current finance minister, in an interview outside this chamber, said, and I quote, that $27 million is not a lot of money. In fact, it would not matter one iota to the people of Nova Scotia. Well, here's a newsflash. $27 million is a lot of money. You can do a lot of good with $27 million. Like support the Avalon Sexual Assault Center and others like it, that's something that could be done along with a whole lot of other things. And so I'll ask the Deputy Premier, does he agree with the Minister of Finance that $27 million doesn't matter one iota? Are they really that out of touch?
The Honourable the Deputy Premier.
What I do agree with, Mr. Speaker, is I agree with later today, we will be voting on a balanced budget, a budget that's in surplus, and a budget that was brought in by this finance minister, one of the best finance ministers this province has ever seen, Mr. Speaker. That's what I believe.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And thank you for the applause. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Deputy Premier. The government has chosen to tie its hopes and dreams to a project in Newfoundland rather than looking at the evidence which has now overwhelmingly been submitted that shows that building out the renewable energy system in Nova Scotia would be cheaper for ratepayers, would provide longer-term stability, and would provide better supply protection. Mr. Speaker, let's be clear here. All of the evidence, with the exception of the evidence filed by the government and by Nova Scotia Power, says independently that built in Nova Scotia renewable energy would be cheaper for ratepayers. Mr. Speaker, the Utility and Review Board's consultant for the Consumer Advocate said, quote, "We conclude the analysis was faulty, lacking in robustness, incompletely documented, and biased to favour the applicant's desired outcome." That of the government's and Nova Scotia Power's information. Then the board's own consultant called the information submitted by the province and by Nova Scotia Power Orwellian, and I will table that. Mr. Speaker, why is the Deputy Premier and the NDP government refusing to look at local homegrown renewable energy projects as an alternative to Muskrat Falls?
Honourable the Deputy Premier.
Mr. Speaker, you know, that member never ceases to amaze me, you know. I always think his name should be Grimm. For the fairy tales, Mr. Speaker. The reality, Mr. Speaker, is this. Has he not heard of the ComFit plan? Mr. Speaker, we've been introducing locally produced energy throughout this province. The likes no one has ever seen in this province before by either one of those governments, Mr. Speaker. We do support local homegrown energy projects, Mr. Speaker, and that's the reality. We're not tying ourselves to Quebec Hydro, Mr. Speaker. We see it as an all-inclusive. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I didn't know the Deputy Premier was running for re-election in Newfoundland to create jobs there. I thought he wanted jobs in Nova Scotia. But, you know, Mr. Speaker, the Deputy Premier mentioned the ComFit. The Deputy Premier mentioned the ComFit program, so let's talk about the ComFit program. Mr. Speaker, we certainly haven't forgot about ComFit, but the Energy Minister and the government have. In fact, in another consultant's report done for the board by Synapse, which I'll table, says that the Nova Scotia government and Nova Scotia Power forgot to include the ComFit projects in their analysis of available energy. So who's forgetting about ComFit now? Mr. Speaker, why would the government on the one hand celebrate ComFit projects publicly and on the other hand allow the Nova Scotia Power and its own consultant to ignore the impact the ComFit projects have on the financial viability of the Maritime Link?
Honourable the Deputy Premier.
Okay. I hear, Mr. Speaker, the junior woodchuck from over in Yarmouth melting off over there. So, Mr. Speaker, I'll try to please him, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker...
That word is unparliamentary.
Is it? Well, if it is,
Junior woodchuck.
Oh, my goodness, Mr. Speaker. Here, I thought you were a friend of wildlife, but Mr. Speaker, I withdraw the term that's offensive to this House, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you.
But you know what, Mr. Speaker? If I was to stand for election in Newfoundland, they would say, way to go, Frankie boy. You represent the people of Atlantic Canada. You support a made in Atlantic Canada solution, not like the Liberals in Nova Scotia who turned their backs on Atlantic Canadians. That's what they would say to me, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, if the Deputy Premier ran for election in Newfoundland, they would say, thank you for throwing Nova Scotians under the bus so we could get all the economic investment. You know, Mr. Speaker, every single study filed with the board, with the exception of the government's one in Nova Scotia Powers, says it is not the lowest cost alternative. Mr. Speaker, the NDP likes to reference Mr. Dalton in his report, and Mr. Dalton says, and we tabled that earlier, the two analyses support the same finding, that the Maritime Link project is the lowest cost alternative available to Nova Scotia. But the two studies are Nova Scotia Powers and his own initial study. Mr. Speaker, will the Deputy Premier please explain how it is that the government study using data supplied by Nova Scotia Power, data already called faulty, incompletely documented, and based biased to favour the applicant, by other experts, can come to such a radically different conclusion on the financial merits of the project than all of the other independent experts working independently of one another?
Honourable the Deputy Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, it's funny. I make reference to a wildlife animal and it's out of order, and then I listen to the alleged facts in his question, Mr. Speaker. So that's it, sometimes the rules are bewildering, Mr. Speaker. But I'm going to tell you, Mr. Speaker, what I got to say. I want to read back from the platform in 2009. From the Liberal Party, Mr. Speaker, and I quote, and I will, like the member from Dartmouth East table, and I quote from their document, Mr. Speaker, Atlantic Canada's energy sources, such as Newfoundland's Lower Churchill Hydro Project, are potential sources of renewable energy. We must ensure that their economic and environmental benefits are shared by all Atlantic Canadians. We can only achieve this goal through enhanced focus and investment in transmission infrastructure. Mr. Speaker, what happened? Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Hans West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Oh, that's you, Percy.
Since 2009, Mr. Speaker, I've stood in my place and asked the Minister on multiple occasions for updates regarding the EastLink issues that customers in my area continue to have with their high-speed connection and for some who are just not able to be connected. Can the Minister update us this afternoon on how many of these customers are still having trouble with or getting connected to high-speed internet service?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I can say this is that we certainly as a government sympathize with all of Nova Scotians who are not connected. Having said that, Mr. Speaker, we remained one of the most connected jurisdictions in all of in the entire world. We've got about 99. We're at 99.9% connected. We have less than 800 now that require the hard to reach places, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And to the Minister, Serge Paquette has been calling EastLink so much that they won't even take his calls any longer, yet they don't mind billing him for service he's not receiving. Mr. Paquette lives directly beside the very tower that provides his so-called high-speed service. Yet, as you will see from the data, and I'll table that data, Mr. Speaker, he gets little to no service, and this is broken right down by the hour. And in conversation with those at EastLink, there are some questions being raised about the hardware at the tower site. Would the Minister commit to contacting EastLink, given that the government and taxpayers have a contract with them to provide high-speed internet service, and ensure that the appropriate, most up-to-date hardware is in place to provide the necessary service?
Honourable the Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would request that the member submit the name and phone number and the address of that constituent, and I can guarantee you is that somebody in our broadband unit will be in touch with the individual, and there also will be a follow-up telephone conversation with the service provider, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on his final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister for that commitment. Mr. Bouquet will be pleased to once again try and get some results with this issue. Mr. Speaker, there are many people who are and have been paying for high-speed internet, like Mr. Bouquet, another service that they have just not been receiving, and the significant amount of data that I just tabled will actually reflect what the that represents truly represents. My question to the Minister, will he stand with the people in this situation and contact Eastlink in an effort to see that these customers are reimbursed for all the service they have not been provided, given that they have now paid for it twice, both as taxpayers and as customers?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, what this minister and what this government will commit to is we will commit to reaching out, contacting those constituents. And one of the things that we, in those hard-to-reach places, we've asked the service providers. They are right now doing some experimentation. It's been in place now for several weeks. And we're hoping that service providers do have a solution, and I say hoping that they have a solution for those hard to reach places. I can say, Mr. Speaker, in all sincerity, we do feel for those that don't have access, and we are doing what we can on our end to ensure that all Nova Scotians have access to high-speed internet.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister responsible for Communications, Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, the amount of money that this government has spent on ad campaigns while cutting in other needed services has many Nova Scotians shaking their head. For example, when it comes to public education, the NDP government cut $76 million out of classrooms, resulting in 700 teacher cuts and a wait list of over 2,000 kids trying to access speech pathology and child psychology services. So my question for the Minister responsible for Communications, Nova Scotia, would he tell members of the House how much his government spent on education advertising while the government was slashing education spending and keeping us among the lowest per student funding in Canada?
It's the Honourable Minister of the Public Service Commission.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have to admit, I don't have that information in front of me. I have it prepared for the estimates. But I do know that it is critical that Nova Scotians understand what government is doing and why. And certainly the changes and improvements in our education system, it's very important, critical information that needs to be shared with Nova Scotians so that parents and guardians better understand how they can support teachers and other support people within that system. And so we have actually taken our focus off marketing and advertising from outside Nova Scotia like previous governments. We're spending less, but we're doing the advertising within Nova Scotia so that Nova Scotia citizens are better informed about programs and services that they want to better understand and have access to.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And first of all, let me apologize to the Minister. I forgot that they had switched portfolios, so it was no slight was intended. Mr. Speaker, the NDP government was telling schools to tighten their budgets while they spent nearly $750,000 on political advertising, and I'll table that. Mr. Speaker, I wonder if the Minister can tell members of this House then how much was spent on the Jobs Here campaign.
The Honourable Minister of the Public Service Commission.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do have that information, but as I said, not in front of me. I certainly would be prepared to answer it during the estimates debate if the Honourable Member could wait. I'd rather than spin off eloquently into other areas, I think I want to focus on his answer, and I do have the information, and I can bring it to him later today during the budget debate. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I guess we can hope that we make it to those estimates in the remaining 4 hours. But, Mr. Speaker, in 2012, the government spent nearly $680,000 on TV and print ads alone. I'll table that. On the Jobs Here campaign. You know, Mr. Speaker, these aren't ads that tell people about a program or service to which they can apply. That's not to say the government has never run ads that direct them to a service, but the vast majority of the advertising this government has run, while at the same time cutting budgets to universities, cutting apprenticeship training and skills money, and while unemployment was increasing and is projected to increase in this government's own budget, is all electioneering. So, Mr. Speaker, why is the NDP spending public dollars on election ads over public services?
The Honourable Minister of the Public Service Commission.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do want to say that we have taken a completely different approach to economic development in this province. We've based it on expert advice that we received within the first year of taking over office. And it's because of that new approach. I mean, we are trying to improve on the disastrous record of previous governments in terms of economic development. So the Jobs Here and the Workforce Strategy marketing program is to bring residents of this province up to date in terms of the new strategy. And it also directs them to websites that provide critical detail that they may want to know in terms of looking at the opportunities here and better understanding the new approach. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, recent actions by this government to push NASSCAD into merging with another institution have people questioning this government's commitment to NASSCAD's independence and the arts and education community itself. Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister responsible, does this NDP government support the independence of the Nova Scotia College of Art and Design or not?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Mr. Speaker, what we support, Mr. Speaker, is the strongest, most viable institutions of higher learning this province has ever seen, from the French Shore, Mr. Speaker, right up to Cape Breton Island, and we want to support them all and equally so. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, if this minister wanted to support the post-secondary education community, perhaps he should stop cutting millions of dollars out of their budgets every year, Mr. Speaker, and handing those dollars away to some of the largest corporations that we have in North America. When it comes to NASSCAD in particular, this caucus believes that it is an institution that's important to our arts and education community. We support its independence. We know that there were some financial questions around the administration of NASSCAD. Those are now being dealt with. The institution has put forward a 10-year plan to eliminate its deficit, but still this minister continues its attack on their independence. Why is that, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Again, Mr. Speaker, I wonder, like, a word I said earlier was out of order, but he can use a word like attack. Mr. Speaker, we've given that institution $18 million extra dollars, Mr. Speaker. Like, what world does he live in that he's saying we're attacking that great institution? We've done everything to support that. Extra money, Mr. We've gone forward with this. You know, next thing they'll be attacking, prepayments. I don't know, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, he doesn't know, and I don't even know what he just meant. The fact of the matter is, an independent NASSCAD is essential to our arts and education community. And if the minister was paying attention to its impact on the economy, he'd care a bit more about this question. According to the 2009 report on building the creative economy in Nova Scotia, Nova Scotia's culture sector contributed $1.2 billion to the provincial GDP in 2003 and created 28,000 jobs. Mr. Speaker, NASSCAD is at the heart of our creative economy. Why is this NDP government so intent on attacking the arts community in Nova Scotia and killing NASSCAD's independence?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, thank you, Alfie boy. Mr. Speaker, I mean, it's like you talk about a drive-by smear, Mr. Speaker. He's attacked the culture community, the university. You know, Mr. Speaker, we've been. I was fortunate yesterday, Mr. Speaker, to be at the induction of the new president at CBU, where I've got to tell you, the culture of Cape Breton was in full vision for everyone to see, Mr. Speaker. And indeed, in that president's acceptance speech, if you will, Mr. Speaker, he spoke about the importance of culture. Now, Mr. Speaker, the people in the Liberal Party can talk about culture, and I'm sure the only culture they really know about maybe in a tube of yogurt, Mr. Speaker. But I'm going to tell you, Mr. Speaker, we've supported universities right across this province, Mr. Speaker. We've supported them when they needed us, Mr. Speaker, unlike those guys. The last time they were in power, they attacked not only universities, Mr. Speaker, they attacked all of our public sector services, our health care workers, Mr. Speaker. They didn't care about culture workers, Mr. Speaker. They attacked them all. That's about the only good thing, is that they were level. They attacked everybody, Mr. Speaker. So if anybody knows about attacking universities, educators, healthcare workers, it's those people, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Victoria of the Lakes.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I did have a question prepared, but I'm more interested in hearing about the tube of yogurt from the Deputy Premier. Mr.
Order, please. Government business. I will now recognize the Honourable Government House Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we should now leave the chair and the House files up and hold the House on spot.
The Honourable Member for Victoria of the Lakes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and this won't be about the tube of yogurt, I guarantee you. Mr. Speaker, I'm pleased to stand in my place this afternoon and spend a little bit of time talking about the tremendous attributes of the constituency I represent, Victoria of the Lakes. You know, Mr. Speaker, it's been an honour and a privilege for me to represent the fine people of Victoria of the Lakes in this legislature since 2006. And over that time, Mr. Speaker, we've faced many challenges together.